Državni izpitni center.
Matura 2004.
Preverjanje slušnega razumevanja.
Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje maturitetne izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine.
Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nam nanaša.
Najprej boste nalogo prebrali, nato boste poslušali govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in lahko že med poslušanjem nalogo sproti reševali. Vsako govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat, vmes pa bo premor za reševanje. Začetek in konec govorjenega besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak.
Odgovore z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom vpisujte na list za odgovore v zato predvideni prostor. Če se zmotite, odgovor prečrtajte in napišite na novo. Nečitljive rešitve in nejasni popravki se točkujejo z nič točkami.
Po reševanju obeh delov, dela A in dela B, boste imeli minuto časa, da na listu za odgovore s svinčnikom počrnite ustrezne krogce pri nalogi A.
Zaupajte vase in v svoje sposobnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha.
To so bila splošna navodila. Zdaj boste začeli reševati izpitne naloge.
Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You're going to hear a contemporary artist talking about Titian and his art. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column True or False on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
But first to Titian, or Tiziano Vecellio, to give him his original Italian name. He was a genius of light and colour. He helped create the high Italian Renaissance style. And to put it bluntly, he was one of the most gifted painters the world's ever seen.
I was very drawn to the tenderness in many of Titian's works, in particular The Three Ages of Man. And this, for me, is a painting which is a reflection on life, you know, the rites of passage.
As you say, a very tender image, three nymphs, babies, to one side of the canvas, and on the other, apparently a loving couple, a man and a woman gazing at each other, and in the background, the old man, slightly resembling the portraits of Titian himself in some of his self-portraits.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And if you think about the way in which Titian has portrayed the two lovers, I suppose, they're very clearly, they seem to be suggesting that they are lovers, and the way in which there are two recorders or pipes, and these are fairly erotically kind of positioned within the context of the painting, there's something very vulnerable about the way in which I think the man in this part of the painting is portrayed, and that somehow is mirrored or echoed, I think, in the portrayal of the elderly character in the rear right-hand side of the painting.
They're quite dark colours as well, aren't they? We've got a kind of muted dark blue sky. It's almost twilight.
Yes, yes, it's very suggestive of the sort of calmness, serenity. There is a suggestion of the end of the day, the end of time. And, of course, this is echoed by the sort of cathedral-looking structure or the church-like structure in the edge of the horizon, and the elderly man holding the two skulls, looking at them, really, reflecting, in my view, on his life.
Tell me about your own relationship with art of this kind, classic Renaissance art. I mean, as a modern artist, you work in paint and oils, don't you?
Well, I work with portraiture. I work across different kinds of media, from pastel to acrylics to oils, and more recently I've worked in video. I have a video installation that's currently at the Tate Modern. And I suppose that, for me, what I find very inspiring as an artist in Titian's work, and perhaps some of the work of some of his contemporaries, is in fact the drama, the kind of the use of colour, the use of composition, the way in which, I suppose, he tells a story, because I think ultimately most artists are involved and engaged in telling stories or narratives of one kind or another. So, you know, without doubt, I'm sure that most artists would be very inspired by that.
Now you will hear the recording again.
But first to Titian, or Tiziano Vecellio, to give him his original Italian name. He was a genius of light and colour. He helped create the high Italian Renaissance style. And to put it bluntly, he was one of the most gifted painters the world's ever seen.
I was very drawn to the tenderness in many of Titian's works, in particular The Three Ages of Man. And this, for me, is a painting which is a reflection on life, you know, the rites of passage.
As you say, a very tender image, three nymphs, babies, to one side of the canvas, and on the other, apparently a loving couple, a man and a woman gazing at each other, and in the background, the old man, slightly resembling the portraits of Titian himself in some of his self-portraits.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If you think about the way in which Titian has portrayed the two lovers, I suppose, they're very clearly, they seem to be suggesting that they are lovers, and the way in which there are two recorders or pipes, and these are fairly erotically kind of positioned within the context of the painting, there's something very vulnerable about the way in which I think the man in this part of the painting is portrayed, and that somehow is mirrored or echoed, I think, in the portrayal of the elderly character in the rear right-hand side of the painting.
They're quite dark colours as well, aren't they? We've got a kind of muted dark blue sky. It's almost twilight.
Yes, yes. It's very suggestive of the sort of calmness, serenity. There is a suggestion of the end of the day, the end of time. And, of course, this is echoed by the sort of cathedral-looking structure or the church-like structure in the edge of the horizon, and the elderly man holding the two skulls, looking at them, really, reflecting, in my view, on his life.
Tell me about your own relationship with art of this kind, classic Renaissance art. I mean, as a modern artist, you work in paint and oils, don't you?
Well, I work with portraiture. I work across different kinds of media, from pastel to acrylics to oils, and more recently I've worked in video. I have a video installation that's currently at the Tate Modern. And I suppose that, for me, what I find very inspiring as an artist in Titian's work, and perhaps some of the work of some of his contemporaries, is in fact the drama, the kind of the use of colour, the use of composition, the way in which, I suppose, he tells a story, because I think ultimately most artists are involved and engaged in telling stories or narratives of one kind or another. So, you know, without doubt, I'm sure that most artists would be very inspired by that.
This is the end of Section A.
Section B. you're going to hear a recording about candles. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in the spaces provided on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Candles were once kept at the back of the kitchen drawer, often in case of a power cut, but we now spend £150 million a year on them, from the hefty trunks of church candles to the delicate lavender or vanilla-scented floating variety. Ironically, Wax Lyrical, the candle maker's shop chain, was a victim of our passion for candles. It couldn't survive in the face of new and fierce competition from department stores and supermarkets. And Prices, the company which once supplied candles for Florence Nightingale and her famous lamp, and Captain Scott's trip to the Antarctic, only avoided financial collapse by selling out to an Italian firm. So in an age of neon and everlasting light bulbs, why are we turning increasingly to old-fashioned candles? Adam Kirtley reports.
You've got on the table there a selection of different church candles and scented candles. The purple one was a spice one from Christmas. The darker one was a mistake. I just love the look of it. But, of course, the candle light doesn't come through it, so I've learned something through that. I have sconces.
Wendy Harris lives in an idyllic oak-beamed cottage in Alsford near Winchester. Like a growing number of people in the UK, candles are a part of her weekly shopping list. She's dozens of them in every room in the house, from the mantelpiece to the bath, and they are an essential part of her life.
Magical. I couldn't live without them. They set the scene. They're magical, sensual. And there's the fire going on in the living room that you're in, and all the candles on, and it's just magic.
Where do you get them from?
I go to car boot sales, and I pick up the odd ones for 20p. I go to the village outlets, and you can get 18 long tapered candles for about 250.
How do you put them all out?
We tend to foof them out. It's very calming somehow, when you've had everybody's got you go...
Wendy Harris may buy hers from car boot sales, but in recent years the candle displays in department stores and supermarkets have flourished. Simon Hawkins is from the nearby Debenham store in Southampton. Keeping the shelves of the likes of Debenham's fully stocked are a wide range of manufacturers based both in the UK and abroad. Each year they all gather at the NEC in Birmingham to display their wares to the retailers. Mike Buttery is from Bolsius, Europe's largest manufacturer. He's in no doubt as to why the humble candle is now such a hit.
I always pray to Carol Smiley every evening. I think it is a lifestyle, and I think people have cut into that. And when you see the lifestyle programmes on television, at the end of it, there's candles. And so, God bless you, Carol Smiley.
So previous generations really missed out, did they?
They did, very much so. They kept household candles under the kitchen sink in case of power cut, and they had a red one and a green one for Christmas. They were never lit. And they've just brought out year after year. People like them now, and that is fueling the growth.
How can European and UK manufacturers compete in an ever-globalised market with China and the Far East, certainly on price?
We make 1.2 billion tea lights a year, and that is billion. So we can compete on price with the Far East. You mass produce to bring those costs down.
Now you will hear the recording again.
K. candles were once kept at the back of the kitchen drawer, often in case of a power cut, but we now spend £150 million a year on them, from the hefty trunks of church candles to the delicate lavender or vanilla-scented floating variety. Ironically, Wax Lyrical, the candle maker's shop chain, was a victim of our passion for candles. It couldn't survive in the face of new and fierce competition from department stores and supermarkets. And Prices, the company which once supplied candles for Florence Nightingale and her famous lamp, and Captain Scott's trip to the Antarctic, only avoided financial collapse by selling out to an Italian firm. So in an age of neon and everlasting light bulbs, why are we turning increasingly to old-fashioned candles? Adam Kirtley reports.
We've got on the table there a selection of different church candles and scented candles. The purple one was a spice one from Christmas. The darker one was a mistake. I just love the look of it. But, of course, the candle light doesn't come through it, so I've learned something through that. I have sconces.
Wendy Harris lives in an idyllic oak-beamed cottage in Alsford near Winchester. Like a growing number of people in the UK, candles are a part of her weekly shopping list. She's dozens of them in every room in the house, from the mantelpiece to the bath, and they are an essential part of her life.
Magical. I couldn't live without them. They set the scene. They're magical, sensual. And there's the fire going on in the living room that you're in, and all the candles on, and it's just magic.
Where do you get them from?
I go to car boot sales, and I pick up the odd ones for 20p. I go to the village outlets, and you can get 18 long tapered candles for about 250.
How do you put them all out?
We tend to foof them out. It's very, very calming somehow, when you've had everybody's got you go...
Wendy Harris may buy hers from car boot sales, but in recent years, the candle displays in department stores and supermarkets have flourished. Simon Hawkins is from the nearby Debenham store in Southampton. Keeping the shelves of the likes of Debenham's fully stocked are a wide range of manufacturers based both in the UK and abroad. Each year, they all gather at the NEC in Birmingham to display their wares to the retailers. Mike Buttery is from Bolsius, Europe's largest manufacturer. He's in no doubt as to why the humble candle is now such a hit.
I always pray to Carol Smiley every evening. I think it is a lifestyle, and I think people have cut into that. And when you see the lifestyle programmes on television, at the end of it, there's candles. And so, God bless you, Carol Smiley.
The previous generations really missed out,
did
they?
They did, very much so. They kept household candles under the kitchen sink in case of a power cut, and they had a red one and a green one for Christmas. They were never lit, and they were just brought out year after year. People light them now, and that is fueling the growth.
How can European and UK manufacturers compete in an ever-globalised market with China and the Far East, certainly on price?
We make 1.2 billion tea lights a year, and that is billion. So we can compete on price with the Far East. You mass produce to bring those costs down.
This is the end of section B.
Zdaj imate še minuto časa, da na listu za odgovore s svinčnikom počrnite ustrezne krogce pri nalogi A.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z listom za odgovore položite na rob mize.
Nasvidenje in srečno!